My guest in the studio tonight is one of the most captivating voices and performers in Australian jazz today. Her diverse career has taken her to jazz festivals around Australia, performing with the cream of jazz talent, hotel engagements in Asia, and a performance for Princess Mary's royal visits last year. Catherine Hunter, welcome.
Hi, Frank.
At what point in your life did you decide to become a singer, Catherine?
Oh, gee, I've always sung. I think it was probably, though, when I was about 16 that I decided to sing jazz. And we were just talking before about that jazz bug biting you. And once it does, and once I discovered a slightly different style of music vocally, that was it. So I've really just focused on jazz ever since that time.
How did you get interested in jazz anyway? Like, it's not something that is presented to Australians, is it? You've really got to go out and seek it, find it out.
Yeah, I think I never listened to a lot of popular music when I was young, partly because I think I was probably a little bit more into musicals and the show side of things a little, but more, I think, really old movies. My parents used to watch a lot of the old Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movies, and of course a lot of the great jazz standards came from musicals or movies. So I think I really had always loved the style of music and was very familiar with Cole Porter and Rodgers and Hart and, you know, Gershwin and all the great songwriters from that era. And of course I didn't really make the connection that a lot of those, the jazz standards, were from that era and from, you know, those sort of types of performances until I started discovering jazz when I was a little bit older.
Now, you've been on the Sydney scene for a little while.
Uh-huh.
I think I remember you in a vocal quartet with Steve Taylor Brown.
Yeah,
is that right?
Transformation. Yeah.
Transformation, mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, so you've been on the scene for a little while here in mm-hmm. Sydney, but this is your debut album. Why has it taken so long for you to do this?
I did do one actually about 5 years ago. It was self-produced, but I didn't really promote it very much or distribute it. It was probably more as a demo. And look, I've really been wanting to do one, I guess, for quite a while. I did a stint for several months in Hong Kong a couple of years ago that was fantastic and really came back ready to record something then, I guess, and then life got in the way in some ways. Got married not long after I got back and, bought a house and did all those sorts of things and then, but have been sort of champing at the bit since then. And, you know, the other thing is, of course, there's an expense involved in producing an album. So to have the ABC actually invest in this and it was just absolutely fantastic. And I guess it took probably a couple of years of talking to them to get it from the first initial stage to actually now having the finished product. So, you know, also knowing that was in the back of my mind, that opportunity was there, it sort of just took a while to sort of come together. But
I recall seeing you at a number of jazz festivals, I think up at the Jazz and the Vines.
Oh, yeah.
I think you may have been performing with Bobby Gebbett that day,
uh-huh.
Maybe. Who are your major influences in jazz or in music as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
And are they necessarily singers?
They are, actually. I think Sarah Vaughan, without a doubt, in terms of the jazz genre. I mean, you know, for me, it's just there's no one else. She is the greatest. You know, within hearing sort of a couple of bars of Sarah singing, you know it's her and it's swinging like nothing else you've ever heard. Also, I guess in terms of vocalist, Nancy Wilson is another that I absolutely love. And they're very different. I mean, Nancy has a very straight, pure tone that's just wonderful and sings probably a much greater sort of range of styles of music. And, you know, I guess too I refer in the cover notes to Bobby Gebbett, and you mentioned him before, and he's really been a mentor to me. And although I studied music and have studied vocally and continue to do so, in terms of influencing me and teaching me about jazz and the essence of jazz, Bobby has had a huge influence on me, and I'm eternally grateful to him for all the time that he spent, you know, sort of just teaching me. And I think he's a great teacher to many young jazz students. And, you know, if you approach sort of your time with him with an open mind, there's so much you can absorb.
It's called Dreammaker. It's on the ABC label, Moon River. These are a lot of your favourite songs. Tell us about Moon River.
Moon River, I guess, is special because my mother used to play it on piano and sing, so that's a lovely memory. And it's special to this album because it was sort of a first take and we'd played around with it with the whole band, and then John Morrison, who produced the album, said to Brendan Clark and me, "Oh, guys, why don't just the two of you go into the studio and try it?" And we kind of looked at each other and said, "Are you sure?" And John said, yeah, just trust me. So we did, and we walked in and we just played it through as you hear it. Yeah, it was just one of those moments when we thought, wow, that's lovely, let's use that. So I guess it was very much a very spontaneous track as jazz should be.
About the recording process, Catherine, a duo there, but most of the jazz people I talk to, it's not a jazz is just not a music that you can go in and take a studio over for 6 weeks. How did this one go? Was it like a 1 or 2 day job as well?
Yeah, pretty much. It was probably, because it depends how long you call it day. But we really, of course, all of the band were playing live, and I sang everything live with them the first time, or the first, you know, few times through. And we really did that over 2 days, but they were pretty sort of easygoing days, say, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning till maybe 5 or so. And then I went back and did the vocals on some things and, you know, all up probably 3 days. So, yeah, you're right. It's a very short time in the studio. I mean, there's a lot, the whole process is a lot longer, and I think you spend much more time on all the other elements, and really the actual activity of recording it is in many instances the sort of quickest or shortest amount of time that you spend. It's probably the most important, but it's you don't have the luxury usually, as you say, of spending, I mean, you know, rock bands who you hear spend years in studios doing things. Like, I mean, I wonder what a jazz band would come out with if they spent years in a studio. It's mind-boggling. It'd probably be way too over-engineered.
Overproduced. Yeah, But there seems to be a renaissance in the popularity of female jazz singers. What do you think has driven that?
Do you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess I love Diana Krall. I listen to her a lot. I mean, I must say, I don't know that I necessarily think there's been a resurgence. I probably think maybe there's a few more male vocals. And I guess if you're thinking internationally, you know, if you look at Michael Bublé and Jamie Cullum and those sort of, you know, people, I hope, I mean, it seems in some ways that jazz seems to be a trend or fashionable in some instances, and it comes in and out of fashion. But in many instances, if you look for it, it's always there. You know, you think about movie soundtracks, where all of a sudden it's a jazz soundtrack if you really listen to it, or there's some key covers on that. But look, it's great music, it's enduring, and I'm not sure, while there's a lot of popular stuff that I enjoy, I'm not sure that there's as much great music being written that is going to stand the test of time. You know, in 50 years' time, will we still be listening to the same stuff?
I just wanted to talk to you about your repertoire, and in reference to the jazz standards that you've covered here, do you choose your repertoire based on your own life experiences and emotions?
That's an interesting question, Frank. Not really. No, I think I just choose a tune based on the beauty of the tune itself. I mean, there's so many great songs. I mean, you know, Manada Carnival, I'd always sort of heard the melody a little bit, but then I was doing the Norfolk Island Jazz Festival a couple of years ago with Don Burrows, and I heard him play it. And it was just haunting. It just completely bewitched me at the time, and I thought, wow, that's it. You know, I have to learn that tune. So it's probably the melody. But I do think there has to be some kind of connection with the lyric, or, I mean, there's certainly some tunes that, because perhaps of the story being told or whatever, maybe it doesn't resonate, so I won't go near it, no matter how great a tune it is. Or there's some tunes that are so epic that, you know, I sort of feel that they're best left alone, perhaps, you know. Certain things that are trademark tunes, I mean, Strange Fruit and Billie Holiday, I mean, you know, I heard Cassandra Wilson sing that live, and probably I think she's one of the few people who could really take a tune like that after so long and do something quite amazing with it.
What do you believe to be the most important elements when interpreting a song?
I think it's really important, obviously, to know the lyric and know it well, because you are essentially telling a story or interpreting a story. But it's not just about, I mean, for a vocalist in particular, it's about the lyric, of course, and I think that's one of the reasons why people enjoy listening to vocalists, because they enjoy listening to the story. I mean, a great example is a tune on the album called Guess Who I Saw Today, and at the very end of that tune there's sort of a twist or a punchline, and I must say that throughout that entire tune I take myself probably on the journey lyrically along with it. Other times I'm possibly concentrating a little bit more on the I guess, you know, whether or not the sort of feel, I guess. Yeah, and it's really about the essence of the tune, which is much more than lyric. It's also about whether it's swinging and, you know, the interaction with the other guys in the band. So it probably differs a little bit for me, I think, depending on the tune. And I think you go through phases too with a tune. You know, ones that are newer to you versus ones you've known for a long time, you know, you probably treat slightly differently. This is, as I mentioned, I heard Don Burrows play this. I mean, I sort of was slightly familiar with the tune, and then I heard Don play it and I went, oh, it's so beautiful. And I always think these tunes are, because, you know, they're written in Portuguese or Spanish, a lot of the bossa novas, and they sound so beautiful when they're sung in the original language. And it's quite a significant tune because it comes from a movie called Black Orpheus, and often this tune goes by the name Black Orpheus because it's sort of the title track from that movie. And I didn't realise it was such a significant film in terms of, you know, sort of the political message of the time, and also I guess really thinking about, apparently that movie really brought bossa nova to the forefront and made bossa nova music very popular right before, you know, Astrid Gilberto sort of came out with her record-breaking Girl from Ipanema. So it was one of those sort of turning points as a tune for a whole kind of wave of music that had already that existed, but really brought it into popular culture a lot more in the United States.
The musicians on this album, Catherine, they're a great bunch of musicians. How did you go about choosing them?
That's tricky. Look, I studied with Carl Dewhurst, who played guitar at the Canberra School of Music many years ago. And, Carl's always been one of my favourite guitarists, and there are some great guitarists around. But Carl really, just for me, just stands out. I think it has always been a favourite. He played on my first album as well, so that was probably a pretty easy decision. I also worked with Andrew Dickerson when I first came to Sydney. So, again, you know, there was that sort of, I guess, people that I've known for quite a while, and Brendan Clark, who I played with for quite some time. And Tim Jenkins is really a musician that I've only met in the last couple of years. John Morrison was... It sort of introduced me to Tim through John's band, who I did quite a lot of work with. And, you know, it was really, I guess, sort of Tim and I sharing a similar sense of what we wanted to do with the album as well. And, you know, I mean, I guess Brendan and Andrew play a lot together. And so I wanted to sort of somehow try and have a slightly fresh combination of people, as well as having, you know, obviously great musicians around me. Yeah. So, you know, I guess Tim sort of brought that freshness to it. But then, of course, you know, I'm so thrilled that Bobby features on Sending the Clowns, because, you know, it's a masterpiece. I mean, you just hear him playing and it's just all there. So in some ways I didn't want to put together Bobby's trio. I guess it was a combination, as you say, of that experience and people whose playing I loved and who are obviously brilliant artists, and having sort of something, a slightly different mix to sort of the combination that other people have had on their albums, I guess.
What's in your CD player at home, Catherine?
Well, at the moment, it's actually the new Diana Krall album is in the car playing, so that's great. I must admit, we've been going through a bit of a renovation for the last few months, so the house is a complete bomb site. And, you know, I'm desperately... I can't even make my way to the stereo, really. Like, you have to climb over chairs and dust. It's dust all through it. Probably. So I played it for the first time a couple of days ago, and I was listening to Nancy Wilson, a great album called But Beautiful, and she does the most swinging version of I Thought About You with Ray Brown on bass. Amazing. But, I've just recently been listening to the new Diana Krall album, which is some lovely big band arrangements, really, really great ones. But I'm a bit of a... I'm very boring. I really only buy jazz and I only listen to jazz. And actually, speaking of Birdland, I heard on a great Clint Eastwood soundtrack, Bridges of Madison County, where I found the tune It's a Wonderful World that's on the album.
Okay.
Which is from an album by Irene Kral and the Junior Mance Trio. And I looked for it everywhere and tried to order it. And I went to Birdland and they were like, oh, we think it's out of print. We're not sure we can get it. And they looked on all the websites. Anyway, 2 weeks later, they called me up and they'd found it. So it's a really quirky, lovely album. So I've also been listening to that a little bit as well.
Thanks again, Catherine.
Thank you, Frank.